Hey everybody, welcome to the Fear of the Fincast. I'm Jacob Sunter, the managing editor at fearthefin.com with Marcus White. Marcus, that was a pretty good hockey game last night. That's probably the best game this season, not just in terms of the way the Sharks played, but just in terms from a neutral entertainment value standpoint. That was a lot of fun. That was a good game. I could go for watching a few of those games in June this year.
Yeah, Caps Sharks would be a pretty awesome Stanley Cup final matchup. I think the Caps games are always fun. Sharks did a good job last night. Surprising they kept Washington off the score sheet on the power play. That was probably the most surprising thing, and the power play success they had last night. Although those things it always seems to happen that way.
Yeah, what was more surprising, that the Sharks scored twice on the power play, or that the Sharks were able to keep the Capitals' power play off the scoreboard?
I'd say probably the power play success. We hadn't seen the power play look like that in a long time. I mean, they looked like, I'd say they looked like the power play of old, moving the puck around. I pre-game, I think Kurz quoted Joe Pavelski and them saying they needed to work harder on the power play and outwork opponents. As nebulous as that may be for us to notice, I don't want to say, oh, their effort level looked better, but I think some guys had a little more jump in their step last night, given that they hadn't played since Monday. I think Thornton, that was arguably the best he's looked all season, in terms of speed. He did not look a step slow. He looked like Joe of last year, which is hopefully a good sign down the stretch. I mean, the Sharks have some more schedule congestion coming up here down the stretch, but it just goes to show that what a rested Joe Thornton can do, because I thought he played awesome last night.
Yeah, I think a big thing, and again, I know that this is something that's been talked about in the past, and this is something that was definitely a thing for some of those Blackhawk teams near the end of their little dynasty, was that some of those guys definitely took it a little bit easy down the stretch during the regular season because they knew what they had to do to save up the juice for the playoffs. And I've always been skeptical of that because it's something that we can't really not just that we can't quantify, but we can't really know because, well, we're not in their heads. But it's something that's always been in the back of my mind, especially you look at the NBA and you look at what the Spurs do with just resting guys and benching guys for games. Is something you have to always think about. But I think as it relates to the power play, the second goal that they scored, that's a play where Brent Burns takes a shot right off a faceoff and then rushes in to go get his own rebound. I think that's something that maybe you don't see in a game against the Jets in February, but you see in a game against the Capitals where guys are a little bit more motivated to get the job done. Logan Couture played out of his mind, but that's not unusual because Logan Couture is a very competitive guy that wants to go get that kind of stuff done all the time, always anyway. And I think even Brent Burns is a guy that does that all the time anyway, whereas Joe Thornton's a little bit cagier and a little bit more work smarter, not harder kind of a guy. Yeah, I don't think that this changes that the power play still has a lot of work to do, and they still have a lot of things that they need to fix. Because I think even before they scored a few times or twice, I know they scored with the power play expiring also, so it really probably should have been three power play goals. It still didn't look very good in long stretches. I still think that there's stuff that needs to change, but I also don't think the penalty kill is very good, and they're very lucky to escape without giving up anything.
Certainly
And
got some help from the goalpost last night.
they did. They also got some help. There were I what two, three times where the puck just fluttered over the crossbar, which I thought was interesting. That seemed to happen a lot last night. They should probably also not make a habit of making a parade to the penalty box against teams like the Capitals. That
Yeah,
seems
it's
like
not
a bad thing
sustainable.
to do. Joe Pavelski in particular has had a real bad habit of going to the box lately. This is his second most penalty riddled campaign of his career. 2008-9, I believe, is the only season where he's taken more penalties, and I'm hoping that's not a sign of things to come, because that's usually a sign of decline in players when they start taking more penalties. It could be nothing, but it's certainly in the past 5-10 games he's taken more marches to the penalty box, and that would be concerning. But the good news is that last night Logan Couture was incredible, Brent Burns was incredible, And Martin Jones was very good, and that's all good news for the Sharks, obviously.
With 16 games left in the season, he is 4 penalty minutes away from tying his second highest mark of his career, 5 minutes from passing it. He's 19 minutes away from passing his career high in penalty minutes, which you're correct. He did set in 08-09. He took 46 penalty minutes in that year.
And if you look at if you scroll down on the old hockey reference to the NHL miscellaneous category, they'll have it sorted by penalty minutes per game. He's at 0.42 right now. His highest is 0.58, so he's not gonna eclipse that.
Right.
0.58 is that's a lot. That was a busy year. I don't know if he got gotten fights that year or what the deal was
I don't remember him being a guy who was penalized a lot. That was the year they won the President's Trophy. I can't say that sticks out from that year.
Yeah, I really like to go back like through the game log to try to figure out if there was like, you know, a game or two where he took a bunch and there was like, you know, maybe some a game misconduct or something that like really jacked up his penalty minutes. But yeah, right. So I'm assuming that year is an outlier and this year is more, just regular, taking some penalties.
He's at, like I said, he's at his minutes from the previous few years. So that's potentially a sign of decline. Could also be
could just be a coincidence.
Could also just be a sign of bad luck, a sign of officials noticing a little more going on.
The officiating last night was not great.
Little odd,
I wouldn't say necessarily that like the Sharks got the worse end of officiating, because I feel like they got bad calls. They could have been called for something else, but they were not good calls either. Weird. It was a weird night.
Yeah, I think it was very, very odd. The hook on Mark Edward Vlasic was one of the odd. Maybe there's a slight pull there, but I mean, if you're telling him that's a hook, what else can a defenseman do there? Like he lifted the stick. He did everything you're taught to do, everything that's legal. So I thought that was kind of funny that
Brent Burns has his hands all over Alexander Ovechkin and that.
Right. Like if you're gonna,
it's like, okay, if we're gonna call something in that situation, yeah. I mean, I think that's probably what we're gonna call.
Yeah. Agreed.
Meanwhile, did TJ Oshie draw like every single penalty? I think he drew almost every penalty.
He'd like it.
So I guess that's his value.
He's a better player than I give him credit for. I do think he's definitely overrated from Sochi. That was a big moment, but they didn't win a medal, so like.
You know. I think he has worked his way from being extremely overrated to now actually being underrated. So yeah, I think he's going to work his way back to being properly rated.
He's probably in that range. I mean, he's a very good fit with Ovechkin and Backstrom on that Capitals top line. I mean, their depth is crazy, man. Like the fact of Gennady Kuznetsov is on their second power play, And Vlasic even said that before the game. He was, he's like, well, Kuznetsov's their second line center. He's one of the best players in the NHL. So, it's gonna be interesting to see if this is a matchup in June. I'd love to see it. I think the teams are evenly matched. I think it'd be has the potential for being an all time great series. I think the Sharks too, very fortunate. 4 goals, 24 shots. That does not happen often to Braden Holtby, and I think as 2 of them are on the power play, you take that and run no matter how you win the game. I haven't had a chance to look at the possession numbers from last night, but if they got out possessed, I'm sure they're not stressing it too much, because if you can put up 4 goals on Braden Holtby, you should probably keep the pucks, because that's not going to happen very often.
Yeah, well, the Sharks scored 4 goals last night. They scored 3 goals in their other meeting. That's 7 total goals on Braden Holtby. That's this season. You take it. The Sharks at even strength were a little bit worse in Fenwick and a little bit better in Corsi.
Okay. So it's an even game.
And that's what it's going to be against a team that's this good in possession like the Capitals. I thought that the Sharks came out playing okay. I thought they played a very good second period. Then by the third period, they really took the game over. I just thought that they were able to kind of to gas the Capitals.
Yeah.
I think that's what they should be able to do on home ice. I thought that something that was really what I liked was that I thought Pete DeBoer did a pretty good job line matching. And by line matching, usually with Pete DeBoer, just means putting Vlasic out there against the top line. I think he did a pretty good job of that. I think he recognized pretty early that the fourth line was very, very badly overmatched. And yes. I think that he did a pretty good job mitigating that to the best of his ability. The fourth line has done a really good job this season against almost every fourth line in the NHL. And this is going to be one of two, maybe three right. fourth lines that they cannot dance with. You know, this is a fourth line that's got what? It's got Jay Beagle, Daniel Winnick, and Tom Wilson. And listen, right. Tom Wilson's not a good NHL player, and he's still much better than Michael Haley is.
Right.
And that showed. I mean, they just ate them for lunch. It was not close. You know, the fourth line was by far the worst for the Sharks, was the worst line on the ice. And not just in terms of possession numbers. You could just tell. I mean, they just looked lost out there. Winnick was able to slice them up. He scored a goal. I scored the first goal of the game, and they just the fourth line looked lost. And I think we talked about it a little bit. Say what you will about Michael Haley being in the lineup, you really can't put Haley and Ward on the same line and expect no. those two players stylistically to mesh.
Yeah, I don't think they're a good fit together, and I think that bore out last night. It seemed like there might have been some mixing up of the third and fourth lines, especially towards the end of the game last night. I couldn't really tell. I could be speaking completely out of turn. That's the worrisome. That's what's going to happen against a team, you know, against a team like Washington, against a team like Pittsburgh. It'll be interesting to see how DeBoer responds tomorrow against Nashville. They're another very deep team. Just acquired PA Parenteau. They're even deeper. So it'll be interesting to see how he makes it up that fourth line tomorrow night. You can have Michael Haley in the lineup for sure. But he's not a good fit with Joel Ward. I mean, you've seen him, the players you've seen him mesh with, you know, maybe this isn't fair because it's a limited sample size and some of those players are very skilled, but you know, I remember when he played with Ryan Carpenter and Kevin LeBanc, and they were a very, very good fourth line together. You know, like yep. I think he, you know, yes, Ward and him and Tierney can play that cycle game down low, but I think Ward and Haley just play too similar of a role in that. I think there's a reason Carlson has kind of had locked that spot on the fourth line, because he's really good there. And like, he's a player that can play with pretty much anybody. I would have had Ward and Donskoy on Hurdle's line last night, because Ward and Donskoy played with, you know, they played with Marlowe in the playoffs last year, and that line was so good for the Sharks. They played with Couture in the playoffs last year at one point. They were such a good pairing to get, they were such a good wing pair together, and they just, you know, they fit stylistically. They play different games. I think I would have made that mix up, but you know, he's got a little, the good thing about this stretch run of where the Sharks are is DeBoer has some time to experiment with lineups. Yes. You want to find your consistent, you know, your quote unquote consistent, you know, best team, I think probably down the stretch, but still 17 games to go. I think he definitely has a little room for experimentation and trying new things out and trying different combinations out and seeing what works and what doesn't work. And you're going to probably be faced with injuries. You're going to be faced with some unexpected circumstances in the playoffs. So I think this is a matter of him seeing against a very good team like the Capitals. Can we trust a fourth line like this? The answer is no after last night, but you know, as long as they learn that lesson, they won the game. And even if they didn't win the game, as long as they learn, you know, and that can help them down the stretch, I think, you know, it's mission accomplished in that regard.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is that it's puts too much pressure on Chris Tierney to do too much. And I think yes. that's a similar lesson to what we learned from Brendan Dillon in the playoffs last year. It's that you can't put too much pressure on your puck mover to do all of the heavy lifting. I think once you get the puck into the offensive zone, that line works. it can right. work anyway. But I think even saw after the first period last night, you know, looking at the possession numbers, all of their zone starts came in the offensive zone, and they still were like, you know, a minus seven in shot attempts. Uh-huh. Like, listen, it's not working. And they didn't really make any adjustments. I know there was that like one shift where Donskoy skated on the fourth line because he had right. been the best possession player of the night, and that was it. That was the only time that happened. I think that, you know, Marcus Sorensen didn't play because he played so poorly against the Jets on Monday, because he played terribly. I wouldn't be surprised to see him back in the lineup tomorrow, because I think that they like him, and I think that they want to try to make him a thing. I think they want to try to make him a thing in the playoffs. That's just a hunch on my part. That's just speculation. Uh-huh. But, you know, I don't know. I think if rubber hits the road and it turns out that he's not a guy, I'm curious to see what they decide to do in that route, because I don't think that I don't really think that Haley is going to be a long-term solution for them when it comes to playing against really good fourth lines deeper into the playoffs. That being said, if they don't feel confident in Sorensen, I don't know if they're going to be willing to go back and call up somebody like LeBanc or Meyer either. I'd like to think that they will, but I'm not necessarily confident that they will either.
Right. So. Yeah, especially if the Barracuda are on a deep run and they feel, you know, and there's certainly I think you can definitely question the merits of it, but if the Barracuda are in a deep playoff run and they figure, okay, you know, they'll be playing 12 minutes a night with the Sharks, or they'll be playing, you know, 20, 21 with the Barracuda in the playoffs, I still think probably the NHL playoff experience would be more valuable for them. And I do think, you know, we've seen the Sharks more so under McClellan, not as much last year, I think, because the team was so solid, but we've definitely seen the Sharks in previous years tap into those quote-unquote black aces and really use their minor league pipeline in the playoffs. You know, some guys basically making their NHL debut in a playoff game. You know, and you won't have to do that with LeBanc and Meyer. I think there's a good chance we see them come up just to have the depth. And I think, say what you will about Meyer's readiness or LeBanc's readiness, I think either of them could play on a fourth line with Chris Tierney and Melker Carlson and have success, especially against these better teams. You might not need them in round one. It would certainly help against a team like Calgary, who's surging and on paper, at least, doesn't really have the depth to compete with the Sharks if the Sharks, you know, optimize the lineup, but they'll absolutely need to consider that option if they move to round two and then to round three and then potentially the Stanley Cup final.
Yep, absolutely. Looking forward, the Sharks play the Nashville Predators tomorrow. The Predators just lost to the Kings yesterday. It's an interesting team, because it's a team that I think has kind of taken its sweet time to get its shit together. But it's still a very dangerous team, at least from a roster construction standpoint. Obviously, the addition of PK Subban makes them a better team than what they were last year. You know, that's just an obvious upgrade going from Weber to Subban. I think that, you know, any Sharks fan that watched that series last year knows that. I think that it's still a team, though, with obvious flaws, goaltending being the biggest one right now. And I still think that, you know, despite the fact that they're a better team roster-wise this year, it's still a team that is still trying to figure out its identity. I think that's something that the Sharks can exploit. It's still a scary team, because it's a team that is just you just get the sense that they are just moments away from turning into a monster. What is it about this team that you know scares you the most about being a potential playoff team?
Man, I think you know, they were hot up until recently. They've lost four games in a row now. They did pick up, you know, they lost in a shootout to Anaheim. They lost in overtime to the Kings last night. There's definitely a sense, like a sleeping giant sense, just because of what we saw last year. And you think with Subban back, that's certainly scary. It seems like they've kind of figured it out in terms of Corsi. They're now 11th in Corsi, 10th in Fenwick. That's not at the heights that they reached last year, but considering how bad they were of a possession team to start the season, That's pretty impressive. They've climbed their way back up into the top third of the league. I feel like they're definitely a sleeping giant. I think the biggest fear right now is how well Philip Forsberg's playing, and how great he's been over the past month or so. He's really turned it on after a slow start, and I think he has the potential to be a top 20 or so player in the league, and he's shown that in previous years. You know, imagine if the Caps had not given him up for Martin Erat and they still had him on that team. A little absurd. I think Forsberg is probably the scariest thing, and because of how well he's playing right now. I'm not sure if Parenteau's joined the Predators yet. I don't think he has. I still think he's recovering from injury, but that's gonna help their depth. This is on paper, like you said, a better team than when the Sharks played them last year. Results haven't borne that out yet, but you know, you just need to get into the postseason. I think they're a dangerous team. Fortunately, it looks like with where they're seated, you know, barring a miraculous push from the St. Louis Blues, the Sharks probably won't see them if they do play them in the playoffs until the Western Conference Finals, which, you know, that's a team I do not want to see at any point, let alone the Western Conference Finals if I'm the Sharks. But yeah, I think Forsberg coming on is a scary proposition. And also, you know, playing against PK Subban after he did an interview with Bill Simmons, that's always a concern.
Oh, hey, I wanted to hit you with one piece of trivia from last night's game. If you had to guess, let's first, who do you think had the most minutes for the Sharks last night overall? We'll start with an easy one.
Brent Burns.
Okay, most even strength minutes for the Sharks last night?
Mark-Edouard Vlasic.
Brendan Dillon.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah, I did.
He had a good game last night, I thought.
I thought he played well, too. He got a lot of tough assignments last night. I think he got because the Pete DeBoer, you know, I talked about it in the podcast. Part of what Pete DeBoer did to shield the fourth line was start the first pairing a little bit early to put him out. And he's done this before. We'll put him out with the fourth line.
Right.
Which I actually really like because it allows the fourth line to play a little bit more offensively. And this is something that people don't talk about when they're like, wow, look at how great offensively the fourth line is playing. It's like, yeah, no shit. That's because they have this shield, which is Brent Burns and Paul Martin behind them. It's called the security blanket, kids, and it's really fun to play with. Anyway, he'll do this. And anyway, I think that put a little bit more pressure on Brendan Dillon and Dylan DeMello to play a little bit more heavier minutes. So anyway, I thought that was something notable that they played pretty heavy minutes last night. I think they ended up being a minus in possession, very, very slightly. But yeah, they played heavy minutes last night. So I think that was kind of cool to see. Dylan DeMello's value is going up precipitously this year. It's too bad that he's been hurt and or healthy scratch through no fault of his own, but this little stretch has definitely helped a little bit, I would think. It's been a weird year for Dylan DeMello.
Yeah, you know, he's out. It's been a weird year of the Sharks' blue line. They lose one defenseman, and then once they get a defenseman back, it's like, oh, another defenseman gets hurt. They've really had to deal with – I think that's probably the place where they've dealt with the most injuries is on the blue line. But, you know, this is the year to do it because this is the deepest they've been in a long time. I mean, you know, Tim Heed's their seventh defenseman right now, for crying out. He could slide in to be a lot of teams' sixth, let alone fifth defenseman at this point in his career. So, you know, I wonder if DeMello's, you know, turning some heads in George McPhee's front office in Las Vegas, and if he's a player the Golden Knights are going to take a look at and, you know, potentially claim. They already have a deal worked out for one player. They've said that. They can't announce it because he's currently playing for the team. And the trade deadline's passed, but they do have a trade. Oh, no, that was a goalie. Never mind. They have a trade worked out for a goalie. And Dylan DeMello, as far as I know, will not be putting on the goalie pads anytime soon.
It could happen. Maybe he's looking for a position switch so he'll get to play more.
Speaking of goalies, when do we see Aaron Dell next, do you think?
Dallas on a Sunday. He'll play the worst team in the back-to-back.
I agree.
Nailed it. What do you think? Chance that he plays against Buffalo also on Tuesday. Will he play in back-to-back games? I think there's a chance.
I think he should. Now that the trade deadline's passed, I think DeBoer, he played Dell against Winnipeg. When else did Dell start? I'm pulling up his game log right now.
I think that there's a pretty good chance that he starts playing, that he plays in, you know, a pretty good handful of games down the stretch here.
Well, I think seeing how well Jones has played since coming back from the bye week, since having that rest, I think that's as big of an indicator. I wasn't necessarily expecting Dell to play that game against Vancouver at home. That's typically a game I would expect Jones to start. So I think there's a good chance that Dell starts against Dallas and then starts against Buffalo.
Well,
seems like DeBoer genuinely wants to ease the workload of Martin Jones. So, and plus, again, you know, seeing how well he's played since the bye week, you know, coming into the game last night, his save percentage was like a 9.52 in three games after the bye week. Not sustainable, but like, you know, this has been a very good four games, and even five dating back to the first game before the bye week against his old club, the Boston Bruins, his old teammates for all of 5 minutes.
Absolutely. He showed them.
Yeah, lots of natural rivalry there.
Pass on me.
I think there's a good chance. I wouldn't put it at 100%, but I'd put it at like 55% that Dell starts two games.
My guess is that Dell starts against Dallas and Buffalo. Jones gets St. Louis and Anaheim. Dell gets Dallas.
It just makes sense, right?
And yeah, then Dell gets Dallas again and Dallas again.
Right.
Jones gets Minnesota and Nashville, and Jones gets the Rangers, and then Dell gets Calgary, and Jones gets the Oilers, and then Dell gets put into some kind of a chamber or something, and
is right
seen again, and that's it.
Yeah, he's in Darth Vader's back to tank.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like, well, I think actually at the last day of the season, there's kind of like a team meeting, and Pete's, you know, it's like, all right, everybody, and last thing, Aaron, hey, yeah, the Della, you want to come up here? All right, I have something for you. And he reaches behind and he takes out this this really, really nice wrapped gift, and he unwraps it, and it's a brand new baseball hat. He says, "Listen, you're never taking this shit off again." To him, and Della puts on the baseball.
Jones gets hurt.
Right, exactly. Actually, you're just going to go in with the baseball hat on.
Right.
Yeah, right. Get used to
on
this,
top
kid.
Of the mask.
This baseball, yeah, exactly.
Or you swing it around backwards.
Swing it around backwards. Yeah, that would actually be a pretty baller move. Yeah, okay. Maybe you could wear it on top, kind of like in the Winter Classic when they put the beanies
like
on.
Like when they put the toque over, yeah.
Yeah, right, exactly.
I'm excited to see Dallas this weekend, too. I don't think we've seen them this year.
We have not. We're seeing them three times over the
– they're an odd team this year. A lot worse than people expected. Their goaltending's been a lot better at even strength than expected. It's been as terrible on the penalty kill as expected.
The penalty kill in Dallas is as bad. It's the worst penalty kill in the modern era. It literally is, I believe, in doing a little bit of research on this, because I still fight for Antti Niemi in death.
You're an Antti Niemi stan, as it were.
Antti Niemi.
Yes, Antti Niemi. Yeah, intrigue. I mean, they're – and even though they're probably not going to make the playoffs, they're still
– What do you mean probably?
They're
dead.
They're not. But anytime
anytime
you face a team with Tyler Seguin and Jamie Benn, you definitely still have to be worried.
Jamie Benn's why they're not making the playoffs. Jamie Benn's been terrible.
Has he?
Yes.
I mean, in what metric? I haven't followed the Stars, so.
All I know is that Jamie Benn got played on like their third or fourth line for a while this year.
Okay, because I checked the scoring rates yesterday, and he'd risen up in the.
Oh, had he? I just know that at some point during like midway through the year, it was like Jamie Benn demoted to like Stars fourth line, and I was like, "What the?"
Put him down, and he was going down.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Yeah. That apparently was like a thing that happened. I have no idea. Again, since we never played them this year, hadn't played them this year.
So odd. The schedule is – they play the Predators twice in 16 days. Then they play the Stars three times. I mean, maybe it's the condensed schedule. So Tyler Seguin's eighth in the league in points. Jamie Benn's 11th at 63.
Okay. So who knows?
He
must have really gone on a tear there, huh?
The only team with two players higher than them is Pittsburgh, because Crosby's second in the league in points. And Malkin is fourth. They've played 59 and 58 games respectively, and they each have 70 points.
Wow, he sucks, huh?
Yeah,
definitely not a top 100 player.
No, man. I think he's probably turned it on since then. He's got as many points as player Patrick Kane in 8 less games.
Hey, listen, all you need to do to motivate a rush is tell him he sucks.
Yeah.
And generally speaking,
I'm looking at these points and I'm like, are Crosby and Malkin going to split the MVP vote on their own team? Because I think they both have a pretty good case. But yeah, I'd imagine Crosby, he's going to be the heart nominee from that team. But I think Malkin will get some votes.
I think that, absolutely. Malkin doesn't do enough other stuff. Crosby is too good an all-around player.
Malkin plays in like every situation, though, doesn't he? Doesn't he play a little penalty kill?
A little bit. Malkin also does a lot of dumb shit that hurts the team.
That's true.
He doesn't.
Hey, man, 1.21 points per game. That's pretty good.
Check out his penalty minutes sometime, all right? Malkin's an idiot.
So, I'll take the idiocy with that score.
I'm not saying you won't, but Crosby doesn't ever do any of that stuff.
Right.
So if you can take it with, you could take it without the calories, you'll take it. Right. Is all I'm saying. It's full Coca-Cola flavor without any of the calories.
Malkin's the trip to Krispy Kreme. Crosby's the high protein healthy breakfast.
Right. Exactly. And it still tastes just as good.
How does they both taste great, but one is
giving you cancer every single day, and I love it. I love the cancer. Give it to me. Give it to me. Speaking of Russians, our dearly departed Russian has contracted the mumps, it sounds like.
Oh, my God.
Did you hear about that? Really? He's sidelined with some kind of a virus, and they're not saying what it is. And listen, I'm putting on my speculation cap. I'm not a doctor, but I play one on the Fear the Fincast. I'm calling it the mumps, kids.
Yeah, give it what's gone on.
Yeah, we send the poor kid up there for 2 weeks. Boom, mumps. Enjoy. Yeah. Gotta feel for the kid.
Yeah.
Speaking of, let's do a little awards talk. I saw multiple, and I assume this is just because in Ottawa there's nothing else to do other than cry about Erik Karlsson not getting the Norris. But I saw multiple people legitimately, maybe even earnestly, talking about Erik Karlsson being a Norris candidate this year. And I guess that's just because they still have to write in 3 candidates. Because they do have to. He is going to get nominated.
I think it'll probably end up being him, Burns, and Weber nominated. The only reason,
because
Weber had a great 15 games in Montreal, and people are going to think that he's the same. I think it's Burns' award to lose. I would wonder. Oh, is there a chance that there could be Burns fatigue, where it's like, oh, he's been so good all season, we're not going to give him the award. I don't think so. I think
can you imagine that being an argument? That's how award voting works.
It's happened in previous years. Awards fatigue is a real thing, where they're like, all right, we're just tired of giving the award to the same guy. Different sport, but Derrick Rose won the MVP in the NBA because everyone was tired of giving it
to him. James. But the difference is that happened over like several years of giving an award.
No, exactly.
It's like a single season thing where people.
Yeah. No, right. I don't think single season Burns fatigue is a thing. Look, he's just having defenseman to the top 10 in scoring. Like he's having a year like we've seen from Karlsson, but he's doing it in a way we haven't seen. You know, maybe they split the vote. Maybe some traditionalists think, oh, well, we could have, you know, there could only be one offensive defenseman, which, like, you know, whatever. I think
is this like a Harry Potter thing? There could only be one. So they have to, like, fight to the depth?
I'd be shocked if Erik Karlsson won the award and Brent Burns did not. I'd be shocked.
It does seem, and I don't know what the reasoning for this is, that even, like, the traditional media types really don't care for Erik Karlsson in a way that they seem to like Brent Burns. And I don't know what the reason is.
I think I know.
Okay.
One's Canadian, Swedish. Like.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. I sometimes think that Erik Karlsson is Canadian.
And also, Burns playing on the West Coast. He's not subject – I don't think he's subject to the same nightly scrutiny that Erik Karlsson is playing.
Well, that's the thing. People just see Brent Burns' point totals. They don't actually have to watch him play. It's like, wow, he's so good. It's like, oh, how does he play? Who cares? And none of them watched how bad he was 2 years ago, because he was pretty bad at defense and stuff. Like, now he's like pretty acceptable at defense. Like, he's like, he plays some defense. Like, 2 years ago when this was first happening, it was like, it was an experience, man. It happened out there. There was some stuff.
He's improved a lot defensively.
Last year, he could have gotten the most improved player award as far as defense, and this year he's just good. You know, he's just
This year he's level and maintained, which was a question after last year. It was like, okay, he improved so drastically. Is this the next step? And I think it's also part of it is just, you know, getting back into the routine, so to speak, and playing the position again. Like, it's probably tough adjusting from playing forward for a year and a half to back to playing defense. And when you weren't, you know, when you were still working on your, on the defensive side of the game for those couple of years, for those, when you were playing defense, you know, it's definitely an adjustment. Man, remembering now it was a thing of, you know, and I, at the time I was like, maybe he should stay forward. I don't know. He's very good as a right winger.
I think something to remember is that the team was constructed in such a way that it made sense for him to stay at forward, and now it makes sense because it's constructed in such a way that he can't go to forward because the team needs him as a defender. I think that's something to keep in mind.
It's never going to happen again. And I just, you know, he's fine on defense. He's going to win the Norris Trophy this year. Like, maybe when he does win the Norris Trophy, we'll write a satirical, like, actually, he should have stayed at right wing award.
Oh, man, I'm really glad I wasn't writing for the site at the time when I was complaining about when they switched him to defender. That's really good news.
Well, you weren't writing for the site in 2014-15? Because that's when they did it.
Yeah, I guess I was. Yeah, I don't think I actually wrote anything about it, though.
Because our previous editorial leadership was banging the drum pretty hard that he should stay at forward. And he was making good, rightfully so. Like, he
proved, I think they were right. It's just that now it's right. That's true.
Now it's like, oh, he's doing the scoring he did as a forward, but on defense. And some of that's even been written about a little bit lately, is how much like playing with Joe Thornton and like activating like the offensive part of his brain, so to speak. Like, he's maintained those same instincts playing defense. He's just now, you know. I think he's always had the skill set to be able to pull this off. He's such a good skater that, like, you know, he could get in trouble and he could get out of it just by using his speed and his skating ability.
He does it all the time. There were moments last night when they got caught in a rush, and he's able to, where Paul Martin is able to just kind of shield a guy for just long enough where Brent Burns is able to skate back in and then neutralize an offensive rush.
Exactly.
That's the style, and it's amazing. And it looks,
Martin,
and it
is looks a great better stylistic fit for him.
Right.
If Burns wins the Norris, he definitely should thank Paul Martin, because I think that's brought out the best in him. And, you know, that's looking more and more with each game. It looked like it from the beginning, but with each game, that's looking, even with Martin's age, that's looking like an inspired signing.
Yeah.
Because of how well they've meshed together.
Yep. I dropped, if there are those of you that are in the group chat, I dropped the defender scoring race chart from Hockey Viz in there. And that's a cool chart because it has both goals, primary assists, and secondary assists in there. And by overall points, Brent Burns is leading, obviously. But if you look just at primary points, which is, you know, a more true indicator of actual offensive talent, Brent Burns is leading by about a bajillion.
Among defensemen?
Yeah, here, and Marcus, I put it in our chat as well. But yeah, it's like, it's just legitimately
not. Wow, yeah, no, he is.
It's so dominant. I honestly don't know if there's been a season where a defender has led the league by this much since Bobby Orr.
I think that'd be something to look into, and something to look back in the archives.
Because to me, like, when you're looking at, and this is someone who comes from a baseball background, where you're judging a guy based on era, right? That would be something that would be interesting to look at, where you're talking about, hey, how dominant is this season compared to the era that he's playing?
Well, your primary points percentage, you know?
Right, exactly.
Because I'd have to look at Carlson's numbers. I think he had a good amount of primary points the last couple of years, but he definitely benefits from some secondaries. But I don't, you know, secondaries aren't, I think they get a bit of a bad rap. They're clearly not as desirable or as good as primary assists. But, you know, I mean, a player like Carlson or a player like Joe Thornton, I think the secondaries are more of a, for players like that, and maybe this is selective bias, I think they're more of a reflection of the player's offensive ability than in other. Like, if a player who doesn't get a lot of points picks up a lot of secondaries, you worry. But when Erik Karlsson and Joe Thornton do, you're like, okay, like, that they're.
I think the thing is that those guys also get so many primary points.
Exactly.
You don't have to worry about the you're not worried about those being noises, I think.
Wow, Duncan Keith got a lot of secondary assists, huh?
Yeah, well, turns out that he's not that good anymore. He's a 1,000 years old. So, yeah.
Man, Burns has more primary points than some defensemen have points. Like,
yeah, he's really good.
Like, he's got more primary points than most of the defensemen have points on this list. Like,
yeah.
Honestly, there's probably a better case for Victor Hedman to be nominated for the Norris Trophy than Shea Weber.
Oh, absolutely, but it won't happen because the Lightning.
Because Shea Weber had a great 15 games.
Well, that too. Right, because the Lightning aren't making the playoffs, are they?
No.
So that's why it's not happening.
And that held. That didn't hold Carlson back. So
Carlson was also otherworldly good. You have to be otherworldly good, and you're
Hedman's just very, very, very
good. Right. And Shea Weber's making the playoffs, or whatever. The Canadians are making the playoffs. The Canadians are going to win the division, right? So, or pretty close. So they're currently in the division lead, although they have 2 games in hand. Can you believe that Ottawa might actually win that division? That's what a time to be alive.
Yeah, kind of crazy given Montreal's hot start and how they won the PK Subban trade after 12 games. Ottawa. I think Ottawa's going to pass them.
It's that Burroughs trade that really sparked them.
Yeah, which Tommy Wingles, man.
Yeah. But Tommy Wingles must have been what did it.
Yeah, the Senators have been playing very well. They've won 5 in a row. Them and the Flames, the two teams that made a trade with each other at the trade deadline, are the hottest teams in the league. Meanwhile, the Devils have lost 9 games in a row.
Tommy Wingles, by the way, has not really caught fire with the Ottawa Senators, if you can believe it.
He scored in his first game. Has he scored since?
He has, but he's actually been worse since he joined the Senators in scoring. He's a 0.15 a game player, point a game player. Yikes. He was 0.22 points a game with the Sharks. He was shooting 11.9% with the Sharks.
And now he's at like 6.
3.8%.
Oh my God. Sons. Yeah, no, that's.
Hey, guys, remember when I said he wasn't very good? Yeah, it's because he's not very good. So that's going to turn out to be a real steal for the Sharks.
Yeah, for sure.
Sort of. What a weird trade. I don't even want to know what Matt Nieto's doing right now. I'm looking.
You might as well.
I know. He's got, oh my God, he's got 7 points in 28 games. Good for him. Shooting 9.3%. 16 minutes a night. Good for him. Reestablishing that value out there. So taking the same number of shots per game. So there you have it.
Right.
All right. So yeah. So Sharks, Predators, 1 o'clock tomorrow. Then they got Stars on Sunday. This is a really good opportunity. Let's talk about where the Sharks are in the standing real quick before we wrap it up. The Sharks have this is a good opportunity on this homestand for the Sharks to kind of wrap up the division, which I think that they're in a pretty good position to do, especially since the Ducks and Oilers seem to have no interest in actually doing anything.
Other than maintaining their current spot.
Yeah, which the Flames are perfectly happy to upend, it seems.
Yeah.
The Flames have now won, I believe, what is that, 7 in a row after last night, I believe it is?
Yeah.
So the Sharks now are at 40-19-7, have 87 points. That's 66 games played. The Ducks have 67 games played, or 35-22-10. Oilers, 66 games played, 35-23-8. That's 78 points. And the Flames have played 67 games, 37-26-4. And I would be remiss if I didn't note that the Kings have only 70 points and are 32-28-6. And it gets sweeter every time
The Blues have a game in hand, but Kings are only a game out of the wild card.
Just because neither the Kings nor the Blues would like to make the playoffs
very much.
But unlike the Blues, who are saying, we don't want to make the playoffs, the Kings are like, we want to make the playoffs. We don't want to make the playoffs at all, but they don't want to tell their fans that they don't want to make the playoffs.
Flames playing very, very well. I think the ideal if you're the minds in the NHL marketing department and the league office. You want Anaheim to slip to 4 and you want Calgary to move to 3.
You want that Calgary-Edmonton first-round match.
You want a battle of Alberta and a battle of California.
Oh, that is just, yeah, that's the dream.
And that'd be a lot of fun. The Sharks have, you know, struggled a little bit with the Ducks this year, but that was so long ago and so early. That'd be a very fun first round if it shakes out like that. And the way the Flames are playing, you can't discount it entirely. And something to keep in mind, too, the Flames have more regulation and over – or they have more wins, excuse me, than the Ducks and the Oilers. I got to look up Roe.
And see
who's got the more regulation overtime wins. Last check, they had the tiebreaker there, too. So it's looking like it could come down to, a tie like that. And if they have more regulation and overtime wins, they're going to have the edge. Yeah, they have the second most regulation and overtime wins in the division. So any tiebreaker with the Ducks or the Oilers, as of right now, if they play even games, they're going to have the tiebreaker over.
It's also worth noting that the Flames have better possession numbers than the Ducks. Not better than the Oilers. I think that's right. Still pretty close. But the Flames, you could argue, are – I wouldn't say they're necessarily a better team than the Ducks, but it's close. We're getting close to that time. The thing that's held them back all year is goaltending, because they have just not been good in that realm at all. Yeah. Brian Elliott's been terrible. Chad Johnson, is terrible, not has been terrible. I think the difference is that Brian Elliott is okay. Whereas Chad Johnson,
they didn't expect this from Brian Elliott. They didn't expect Chad Johnson to play as well as he did earlier in the year. But that arguably kept them afloat and kept them within striking distance. So if they caught fire, so to speak.
Boo.
They won 8 games in a row right now. They're the hottest team. I'm scared. I don't want them anywhere near the 4 seed in the first round of the playoffs.
Right now, you'd rather play the Ducks than the Flames.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Would you rather play the Ducks than the Flames?
No.
Yeah, I'd rather play the Ducks than the Flames.
I'd rather play the Flames than the Ducks, because I don't believe in Brian Elliott. I'd rather take my chances against a crappy goalie.
That's true. They did, and they had success against him last year. But
yeah, I don't know. I guess for me also, there's that when I go into the playoffs, I take a look at the embarrassing loss index. It's like, all right, who would it be more embarrassing to lose?
Way more embarrassing to lose to the Flames than the Ducks.
I don't know. It's tough. I live in Southern California, so I'd have to actually hear it from Ducks.
You'd rescind into your. You'd be like the GIF of Homer Simpson.
Yeah. Pop. Right into the. Well, it's gone. It's not like that. Being said, there aren't any actual Ducks fans. Like, they're just like, they're not real, So, yeah. To go back to our primary point thing with defenders over the past, since 2014-15, that's Burns' first year as a defender, right? Is that right? Or is it 2015-16?
14-15 was his first year back on the blue line after playing.
Right. Okay. Yes. All right. Since then, Burns leads defenders in primary points per 60, 1.52.
Wow.
The next closest is Carlson with 1.26. That's how big the gap is. That's enormous. I mean, it's a quarter point per 60 minutes. It's not little. And then, he's in good company here. It's like Burns, Carlson, Shattenkirk. Goss Despair, by the way, who, is getting benched half the time this year by his idiot coach. Victor Hedman, Roman Josi, John Klingberg, John Carlson. Anyway, these are good players.
Yeah.
So, and points per 60 minutes, this is an all strength, by the way, is a 2.16. So,
he's a good hockey player, that Burns.
He's good. He is very good at the hockey. Anywho. The Sharks really need to get to the conference finals for them not to lose to an embarrassing opponent is really where we're at right now, because they cannot lose to any of these specific teams and leave with their heads held high in the postseason.
Yeah.
I think that's probably fair to say. So, great. It was better last year when it wouldn't have been embarrassing if they lost in the first round.
Yeah. Now it's going back to the.
Here we go. The weight of expectations.
Everyone will forget that they made the conference finals last year.
Yep. It's like, all right. Yep. Same old shit where we're expected to do stuff again.
Yeah.
All right. If anybody has any questions, now is the time, because we're running out of stuff to talk about and existential dread is beginning to shift back in. It's time for the playoffs. Remember the regular season?
So far, either on Twitter or...
That's a good question. Let me check Twitter. Let's see. There are people who want to know why Brent Burns keeps wearing terrible suits. Did you see the picture of his terrible suit from last night?
I did, yes, I did. I very much enjoyed it.
No, you didn't. Shut up.
I enjoyed the suit. I enjoy his bad suits.
Oh, okay. Well, as long as you know it's terrible. There's somebody who wants us to project how many points the Sharks are going to get. Do you want to throw out a guess?
All right, so they got 17 games left. I think they're going to go 10-7 in some fashion. Let's say they go 10-5-2. That gives them 109 points.
Okay. Wow. I'm going to say probably around, well, let's see. I'm thinking if Dell starts a bunch of games, I mean, he's better than Jones, right? So, no, I'm thinking probably around 108 points.
Okay.
That's what I'm going with.
If you think they win 10 of 17 games.
Yeah, that's what I think. That's my gut. Yeah. Let's see what else we got. I've got nothing for why Brent Burns wears terrible suits. I just assume.
I think he likes the style. Fashion. He thinks it's fun.
He has terrible fat. He has terrible taste.
It fits with his shtick. It fits with his keech, whatever.
Wow, you just combined six words. Nice.
Yeah. I know.
I think that you're giving Brent Burns too much credit, and that you think he's doing it on purpose. I don't think he knows.
No, I think that's just his. I don't think he might not know it's bad, but that's just his.
Oh, style. Okay, right. It does fit with his style. I agree. Okay, I just want to make sure we're on the same page. He doesn't know it's bad.
Yeah.
We know what he eats.
I'm sure
at
his teammates tell him. But.
Well, right, right. Come on. Oh, who on the Sharks has the best sense of fashion? I bet Yannick Hansen probably dresses nice.
Oh, man, that's tough. I haven't.
There's so many guys on the Canucks that dress nicely, which I know because I follow six or seven Canucks fans that just
post pictures. They're like, wow, these guys dress great.
Well, too bad they don't win anything, but man, they look good in suits.
Yeah, they know how to rock a three piece.
Well, that's something some guys in San Jose could learn a thing or two about. All right, these guys do not dress very well in my limited experience. It starts at the top. Patrick Marleau dresses nice. That's probably because of his wife, though, because I assume that if it was up to Patrick Marleau, he'd show up in sweatpants.
You've seen how he's dressed in those rookie photo shoots, right?
You know where he's from, all right? At the time,
right, Saskatchewan, yes, sir.
He didn't know any better, all right? Listen,
yeah,
I'll cut him some slack. I didn't know how to dress when I was 17 either. That's fine. Let's see what else we got. Where's the chat window? Oh my god, I just got lost on the internet. Somebody help me. Let's see. Oh, okay, here we go. No one in the chat. We've got one question. Does Dell have a ceiling high enough to be a starter? I think probably yes. I think based on his AHL numbers that he certainly has the ability to do so. I think the NHL sample size is way too small for me to say that with any confidence.
Yeah.
But based on the AHL numbers, I think that he at least, will deserve a longer look as a backup somewhere, whether that's in San Jose or elsewhere. I mean, if he's only going to get, 15 games a year, I think it's in his best interest to try to go somewhere else.
Yeah, I hate trying to project goalies because I also hate doing it.
Yes.
But looking at his numbers project out to him being an NHL goalie, I think he could definitely handle a higher workload. I think, I'd say he probably – this is just my amateur opinion. I'd say he probably projects out to a mid-level, maybe mid to low-level starter, but probably
like a
ideal –
Probably
an ideal platoon guy, plays, 30 anywhere from 30 to 50 games with another goalie, not a 60 game a year starter. But you can get it done with him in today's NHL for sure.
Yeah. Right. That would be my take as well. Okay. So yeah, we'll be back and do maybe another one of these sometime early next week or mid next week. Who knows? Until then, you can follow Marcus on Twitter at Marcus P. White. You can follow us, the Fear the Fin accounts at Fear the Fin. I'm at Jake Sundstrom on Twitter. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or rewatch it in its entirety on YouTube if that's your whatever leisure domain. All right, guys, people, thanks for joining us. We'll see you guys next time.